the building of the Mishkan, the tabernacle, unlike the vast majority of the mitzvahs that we read of, was something that was done then, and that's it. The 613 commandments apply to us now. All right? The temple isn't around, so we anxiously await its rebuilding, so we'll be able to fulfill everything. But the mitzvahs are not history. They either involve our attitudes on life today, or at least our yearnings for tomorrow. The building of the Mishkan, the building of the Mishkan in its state, was something that was temporary. It was for the desert and the early years when the Jews came to Israel. Not only do we find the Torah giving every last detail in the commandment to build it, we then have another two sedras telling us just how it was built. Vayakel and Pekudei. This year, two whole extra weeks. And if that isn't enough, we begin this week's parsha not only telling us that they did indeed build them, but exactly how much silver was used in the building, how much was collected, and how exactly the two were aligned. Understand, this much silver came in, this much was invested in the following, this and the following. And if you think that there's some extra money, the SILF, you know what happened to that? That too was used. This is ancient history. And although it is common to portray us as an ancient people that is a bit obsessed with its history and primarily anti-Semitism, or trying to remember the more glorious days to make up for whatever we go through at the present moment, the Torah is not a history book. The purpose of the Chumash is not to tell us about yesterday. It's to tell us about today, and it's to tell us about tomorrow. How then does the Torah spend so much precious space describing the commandment to build a tabernacle, the building of it, and the accounting? It is therefore obvious that while the Torah is dressing it up in the form of ancient history, in the form of something that was, it's talking to us today. And the truth of the matter is that the good books are busy explaining how every element within the Mishkan represented some other element within life. And although in the actual building of it, that was something that was only in effect throughout the years of the desert and the first years in Israel, the concepts are eternal. The concepts were then incorporated in the building of the temple. And the concepts have become very much part of the way we worship, the way we daven, and the way we're supposed to view life. To begin with, the idea of a home for Hashem, God's house. Obviously, there's no place that we can say he's going to move in. How big is he? How high does the ceiling have to be? You're talking about the infinity itself. In the words of the prophet, Eze bayis asher tivnu li, what house can you build for me? His answer there becomes obvious. He says, the place I dwell is when you behave. The place I dwell, the place that God's presence is to be felt, is where people behave in accordance with the awareness of what he's all about. The purpose of the Mishkan is a place that the Jew can rally around and say, this is an obvious part of the earth where God's presence is felt, although we know He's everywhere, and every element of it is supposed to make us conscious of the connection between that element in our lives and Him. So, we have the shulchan, the showbreads, the table with the showbreads. What's that for? That's dealing with livelihood. An understanding that the source to prosperity is not necessarily your talent. And many people today will be able to attest to that. There are lots of highly educated, capable, unemployed human beings walking around wondering, why is it that people with far less intelligence seem to have made it? The source is Hashem. The source to livelihood. There's one treasure chest. And from there it's all doled out. And how do you tune into it? Well, primarily by doing business in accordance with God's values. So you'd walk to the tabernacle and see these showbreads, and eventually to the temple, where for an entire week they were as fresh as they were when they came out of the oven, where although they were shaped in a way that they should have collapsed, they didn't. And on Shabbos, when they actually distributed it, as small a piece as someone got it would keep him filled. You had an understanding. The key to success is by Hashem's values. You thought twice about next time you were going to cheat in business. You knew that is not going to bring you success. Obviously, the Aron, the tablets, the Ten Commandments were kept in there. There too, we needed something of a reminder. Because once in a while, people can get carried away in their study and forget whose Torah it is that they're studying. This is not another intellectual exercise. This is God's truth. And the success in it depends very much on living in accordance with the standards He's trying to communicate. Becoming a great wise man in Torah doesn't simply mean that you learn the tricks and read a lot and memorize a lot. If you're not prepared to start a process of change, of growth, of character development, and all you're doing is memorizing volumes, you don't become a Torah scholar. It doesn't work. The other one is the menorah. Wisdom. This is referring to not only the divine wisdom, the wisdom of understanding nature, the wisdom of understanding technology, the wisdom of understanding numbers, and understanding that that too has a source. The reason why this world is so perfect, the reason why this world is so detailed, the reason why the laws of nature can be worked with to develop modern technology is because the source is the perfect God, the Infinity Himself. Thinking otherwise will only lead one astray. And this is important. You can have all the theories you want in science. Unless you understand that the root of all is God the Infinity, at one point or another, you're going to find yourself developing theories, complicated ones, theories to run away from reality. Man has managed to do that. What man has come up with to explain the perfection of nature, so long as he does not have to admit to the existence of God, were they not published, were they not presented in sophisticated language, everyone would have a good laugh. Man in the words of the Pasuk, Asher Elokim bara es ha'adam yashar. God created man with a straightforward sense of right and wrong. Vehema bikshu cheshbonos rabim. And what has man done? We have complicated things. Things are not simplistic, but they're simple. Simple meaning straightforward. Man has that ability, and that too was God-given. Man has that ability to be ingenious in the way he can rationalize whatever it is that he's trying to prove. When man runs away from reality and has to explain it, he comes up with the craziest ideas. And then when that doesn't work, so you got to cover up for it with something else and something else and something else, and before you know, you've built yourself a pyramid of theories. And you're not quite sure how you got there. Wisdom too has one source. If wisdom is the study of reality as it is, then obviously if the source of all reality is Hashem, then the study of reality cannot exist without Him. The blessing that Noah gives to his sons, his son Yefet, the great granddaddy of Greece, he says, Yaft Elokim li Yefes, may God give Yefes beauty. Beauty meaning culture. Beauty meaning even wisdom. Beauty means ruling over nature. Learning the natural sciences and being able to develop them. Understanding the nature of society. Understanding human nature. Yaft Elokim li Yefes. But the Yishkon bi'ohalei Shem, may he dwell in the tents of Shem, the great granddaddy of us. Meaning that the beauty of, whether it be sociology, whether it be psychology, whether it be science in general, the natural sciences, whether it be the maths, the beauty of them will only hold water if ultimately they dwell in the tents of Shem. If they understand the source, if they understand why there are laws of nature. And indeed, science has never begun addressing that issue. Every elementary school kid knows that the reason why your pen falls to the floor is because there is gravity. Has anyone explained why there is gravity? Because masses attract. And why, pray tell, do masses attract? That's not science. That's philosophy. And does philosophy explain that? Contemporary philosophy makes no attempt to. Unless there is an understanding that the bottom line explanation of why reality is the way it is because reality has a creator, then there's no way that one can approach it. The essence of what the Mishkan was, and then later the temple, the essence of it is something we walk around with all the time. These are values that we're supposed to appreciate. So when the prophet Yirmiyahu, telling the people off before the destruction of the first temple, screams at them and says, you behave any way you feel like, and your trust is in the temple. He says, Shav lachem. It is vain. You're giving yourself false reassurance. You've turned the temple into a good luck charm. Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem Hema. It's the sanctuary of God. It's going to save us. It's infallible. Pay your dues. Bring a couple of sacrifices here and there. If you think that that's going to protect you, you're giving yourselves false reassurance. And then his next statement is, you want solid, sane, wholesome reassurance. Change your lifestyle. Ask yourselves, are we decent human beings? That's what keeps us going. That's your only guarantee. Using religion is a good luck charm. Using religion is a way of dealing with fears and frustrations, rather than as being the guiding light, establishing values in the way we live, in the way we make decisions. It's terribly misleading. And then we wonder, how could it be? How could it be that God's temple was destroyed? Not once, but twice. Because it was devoid of all meaning. If it was nothing other than a place of worship, then it could not stand. What gives it its eternity is when it's providing values. Every element in the building of the tabernacle, including the sizes and numbers, every one of them has a lesson for us, but that you've got to leave to the good books. When you get down to that level of detail, you've got to know what you're talking about. This week's parsha deals with the Kohen Gadol's clothing. Here was a man that was wearing all these ornate garments in service of Hashem and then going into the Holy of Holies once a year with different garments. Here too, every garment had a size, it had a shape, it had its ingredients, what was it to be made of? There was an order of dress. And we read and we understand that these garments, number one, were ways of explaining, setting this person off. He's serving Hashem. But they're also functional. There were stones with letters that lit up and told the future. Why was he wearing them? Why couldn't there be this little rock in the temple that had letters all over the place that lit up? And the Torah says he is to carry it on his heart. Al libo, it is to be carried on his heart. And we are told that with all of the secrets that were put into the making of these clothes, unless he personally had the proper understanding of the people that he was discussing with God when asking the questions, he would come up with the wrong answer. So we read, for example, the story of Chana. Chana, who at that point had no children, came before the tabernacle, was silently praying for a child, and Eli, the high priest, realized this is no ordinary woman. So he decides he's going to find out from heaven what's going on. And the letters did indeed light up. But they're not in order. And he misunderstood. The letters he saw were Shin, Kaf, Resh, He, which read in that order means Shikora, a drunken. A drunken woman. This silent prayer. Yeah, drunkards walk around talking to themselves. The truth of the matter was that the way to read it was Kaf Shin Resh Hey, which means Kshera, kosher, noble, Kisara, like Sarah. What was he missing? This was supernatural. This was prophecy. This was God giving messages through these ornate garments. What was he missing? His heart misunderstood her. An important element was the heart of the Kohen Gadol. Clothing, in the case of the Kohen Gadol, were part of him. It was a further development of who this person was in the service of Hashem. In very simple terms, the message to us is, you can use whatever you want to. You can be sophisticated. You can develop your wisdom. You can use all sorts of ways of tuning into reality on any level, even a level of prophecy. If you don't first establish a proper understanding and healthy attitude on society, all of that is worthless. It is misleading. Even in the Mishkan, even the Kohen Gadol, and then the beginning of the parsha and the accounting. This seems to have been one of the more crucial ingredients in the building of the tabernacle. There had to be integrity to the very end. The way the money was collected and the way the money was used, that was another ingredient. If integrity was not a necessity for the creating, for the making of the Big Day Kahuna, we would not have all of this part of the parsha discussing it. If you want to make the Big Day Kahuna work, if you want to have this prophecy coming down, if you want to have the Mishkan serving its purpose, if you want to have the open miracles and that direct contact with heaven, it had to have been built with 100% integrity. If anyone got rich on the deal, it wouldn't work. True, the literal meaning of everything we read seems repetitious, doesn't seem to be what you're reading the Chumash for, but the message is so powerful. As holy as the work may be, as convinced as you are that it is right, if you're making a little money on the side and turning a blind eye to something, forget it. All of your good intentions are out the window. It's not going to work. The finale in the building of the Mishkan is Pekudei. The finale is the accounting. The finale is Moshe being able to say, for every half shekel collected, we know where it went. We know what it was used for. For every half shekel, with all the gold and silver that went into the building of the Mishkan, everything was accounted for. We learn a lot of things in yeshiva. A lot of this stuff sounds like it's above and beyond us. There are areas of Torah that are way ahead of where we are at. They're dealing with the stuff that people label spiritual. We deal with all kinds of things. But one thing's got to be very clear. Torah study has got to turn you into a person of integrity. Torah study has to turn you into a person who is accountable for everything he has received from man or from God. Knows where it went. We are accountable for our means, we're accountable for our time, and we're accountable for everyone else's time and everyone else's means. Accountability is the fiber. You can build around it. If you build things properly, you can create all sorts of great things. But the fiber has got to be integrity. That's what Pekudei is all about. Integrity. Throughout the prophets, we read the accounts of how they kept the temple going. And so often we read of how they counted things. The Mishnah gives us rules. The man who went in to get the coins, he couldn't have pockets. He couldn't have cuffs. He couldn't wear shoes. He couldn't have anything that would allow anyone to think that he possibly took a little bit for himself. It had to be pure to the very end. Integrity, that's the fiber. See, in Judaism, We don't see religion as a good luck charm. And when we do, it's mistaken and it doesn't work. We see religion as demanding. And above all, what it demands is living a clean lifestyle with integrity, with values, where everything is meaningful and everything's for real and everything counts. And then everything works. May Hashem restore these values to the nation as a whole. And then speedily in our days we can see the rebuilding of the temple and see clearly how values bring success. How once and for all, living clean is going to give everything good. We will no longer be confused and think that if you want to have the good life, you've got to cheat here and there. Let it be clear to all of humanity that there's nothing like living clean.